Welcome to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and today we'll get some answers. We're beginning a series addressing some of the most compelling questions we get at reasonablefaith.org. But before we begin, I'd like to remind you that Reasonable Faith chapters are springing up all over the United States and in countries throughout the world. Now, this is an exciting development at Reasonable Faith, and we have a special guest we'd like to introduce to talk more about it. Dr. Craig, do the honors.
Chris Shannon is here with us today in the studio. Chris is Dallas-based head of the local chapter in Dallas, and he's going to be the national director who will coordinate all of the chapters, both nationally and internationally. So it's great to have Chris in with us today.
Chris, how does one set up a Reasonable Faith chapter?
The best way to find out the process that you have to go through to start a chapter is to go to the Reasonable Faith website and click on the icon for chapters, and then the process is laid out on there. The first thing you need to do is fill out an application, and the second thing you need to do is provide us with a spiritual narrative detailing your walk, how you became a Christian, and how your walk is, and what your walk is like today with Christ. And the third thing you need to do is to go through the Reasonable Faith 3rd edition book and then fill out the Reasonable Faith study guide that goes along with it and then submit that to us.
All this information is at reasonablefaith.org.
That is correct.
I know that you have a real passion for these organizations to spring up across the nation and around the world. What is your passion here for seeing these happen?
Well, we want to see like-minded believers come together, and this will be a focal point for that, so that they can have dialogue regarding difficult issues about their faith and being able to defend their faith better. And we think that this is going to be really successful and be able to achieve that.
Tell us about the Dallas chapter. What are some of the things that you're doing, some activities, and how's the response been?
The Dallas chapter, the response for it has been excellent. We're seeing a lot of people that are very interested and excited about it. And we're going to be starting off Monday, November 2nd from 7 to 9 p.m. We're going to meet once a month starting out, and we're going to be bringing in some great speakers for our first few chapter meetings. And we're going to just bring Christians together to equip themselves better, to understand issues related to our faith, and to also be able to defend our faith and to reach out to non-believers.
Where's that first meeting going to be, Chris, and who's going to be speaking at it?
The first meeting is going to be at Park City's Baptist Church in the Ellis Parlor Room, and we'll be meeting there regularly. It's located at Dallas Parkway and Northwest Highway. And our first meeting, we're going to be flying in Greg Kokel, the founder and president of Stand to Reason Ministries, and he is going to be speaking on Is One Way the Only Way? So we'll be dealing with the issue of religious pluralism.
This is really a help to churches who often don't have apologetics resources, and this introduces them to Bill and kind of unites the churches as well, because people from all denominations and churches tend to gravitate toward this, don't they?
Absolutely. Through our research, we found that unfortunately few churches are engaging in apologetics. And so this is going to be a way for Christians to get exposure to this vital area of ministry. And we're reaching out to people all across the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So this isn't just for one specific church, but it's for anyone who's interested with any denominational background all across the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. It's a tremendous opportunity to come and to listen to expert speakers and to become equipped so that people can go out into their spheres of influence and really make an impact, being more knowledgeable about their faith and more articulate about their faith, and to be able to reach out to non-believers and ask the questions that people are asking about Christianity today.
Chris Shannon, National Director for Reasonable Faith Chapters, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. And Dr. Craig, we have lots of questions that come to reasonablefaith.org, and let's look at a few of these. This says, Dear Dr. Craig, in his debate with a Christian, an atheist mentioned you a number of times and said this during his first rebuttal. You say that Quentin Smith says that if you're an atheist or a naturalist and you accept the Big Bang Theory, then you have to believe it came out of nothing. And this is simply false, because I corresponded privately with Quentin Smith, as well as almost every other atheist philosopher in the United States, Canada, England, and Australia, and I conducted a non-scientific poll, and I'm here to tell you that unanimously, all of the philosophers I asked said that an atheist does not have to believe that the universe popped into existence out of nothing to accept the Big Bang Theory. He goes on to quote Quentin Smith, who said, "I agree with Graham Oppy that William Lane Craig is just relying on slogans, especially when he uses 'out of nothing, nothing comes.'" And Quentin Smith in that quotation was referring to Graham Oppy, an Australian philosopher, who had also written a quote, "I think this is an instance of Craig's reliance upon slogans." Mm-hmm. Now, we have two things to talk about here. First of all, can the naturalist believe that the universe just is and that it didn't simply pop into existence out of nothing? We need to address that, and then we need to address this accusation about slogans.
Okay, good, Kevin. I think you have separated accurately the two issues that seem to be raised in this question. And I would respond to the first by saying that certainly the naturalist is able to say that a universe with a beginning simply is, without coming into being out of nothing, if he is willing to adopt a certain theory of time that permits that. And I've said this explicitly in my work, that behind the so-called Kalam cosmological argument lies a view of time which is variously called the tensed theory of time, or a dynamic theory of time, or to borrow the convenient terminology of J.M.E. McTaggart, the A theory of time. This is a theory of time that is the common sense view of time that is almost universally accepted among ordinary people, and it is the view that temporal becoming is a real and objective feature of reality, that there is a difference between the past, the present, and the future. The future doesn't exist in any sense. It's a realm that's pure potentiality. The past did exist, but no longer exists. The present alone is real. And things really do come into being and go out of being with the lapse of time. And on that view, if the universe began to exist, then the universe definitely did come into being at the first moment of its existence without any sort of antecedent conditions. It came into being from nothing. Not in the sense that there was a prior state of reality, which is a state of nothingness. Rather, it came into being out of nothingness in the sense that it came into being at that first moment of its existence, and there was nothing before it. That is to say, there was not anything before it. And so in that sense, the coming into being of the universe is a tensed fact that happens at the first moment of its existence, and it does so without any sort of causal antecedents. It is only if you adopt a tenseless or static or so-called B theory of time, according to which all events in time are equally real, that you could say that the universe has a beginning, but that the universe didn't come into being at that first moment. All moments of time are equally real, and the universe on that view has a beginning only in the sense that a yardstick has a beginning, in the sense that it has a first inch. But the yardstick doesn't come into being at the point of its first inch. It simply is extended in space, and in the similar way, the B theorist would say the universe is extended in time. Now, this is a point that I've made myself, so this is not any sort of, insight on the part of the critic of the argument. I've made it very clear in my presentation of the argument that the argument is based upon an A theory of time, a tense theory of time, and that's why I devoted two volumes in the Synthes Library published by Springer Verlag on a defense of the A theory of time and a critique of the B theory of time.
Now, if the B theory of time somehow turned out to be true, some kind of a new insight came in or something, that would do some damage to the Kalam cosmology?
Right. I think then the premise that whatever begins to exist has a cause would no longer be evidently true, because the universe didn't come into being when it began to exist. It's really not beginning to exist that's the key thing here. It's coming into being. And that's what happens if temporal becoming is a real and objective feature of reality. At the first moment of its existence, the universe comes into existence. And I maintain that nothing can come into existence without a cause. Something can't come into existence from nothing. Now, on the B theory, as I say, time and the events in time are extended like a spatial length, like a yardstick. And a yardstick doesn't come into being at the first inch of its extension. And similarly, the universe on this view just exists as a static whole from the first moment of its existence to the last moment of its existence, if there is one. And so on that view, the universe doesn't really come into being in virtue of its beginning to exist. So if the skeptic wants to deny the first premise of the argument, that whatever begins to exist has a cause, he needs to give us good grounds for thinking that the B theory of time is true.
He's got his work cut out for him.
I think so. He's got to refute all of the evidence and arguments in favor of the A theory and all of the objections that I lodge against the B theory, and do the same sort of thorough work that I've done in defending his theory of time to show that the universe can begin to exist and yet not come into being at the first moment of its existence. And now, if he were to do that, then I think what the theist would appeal to is not the Kalam cosmological argument, but what I call the Leibnizian cosmological argument, namely Leibniz's question, why is there something rather than nothing? Why does this tenseless space-time manifold exist? That question still needs to be answered. So the Leibnizian version of the cosmological argument, I think, would still go through in spades.
I can't help but chase this just for a moment because it's so fascinating. But on the B theory of time, time travel might be possible because there's actually a future. It's out there and exists, and we just haven't arrived. But if we could find a way to get to it, then we could do it. In the past, the same. The past still exists back there somehow. And if we could find a way to go back to it and explore it. So if you're going to be a time traveler, you need the B theory too, right?
That's exactly right. And therefore, it is no accident that all of the philosophers who defend the coherence of time travel are B theorists.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that because of pop culture and movies and some of the great movies we've talked about as well, the time travel movies, I think that the layperson who is not trained in this area, in the philosophy of time and so forth, just assumes that somehow, some way, time travel is true and therefore the B theory is the valid theory.
I don't know if they do, Kevin. I think you're certainly right that time travel movies are so engaging and entertaining. I enjoy them myself. I really like time travel movies, even though I think that what they posit is in the end metaphysically impossible.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, I think, Kevin, that people have a deep, deep sense that the future is open, that it's not yet in any way determined. It's not out there just sort of waiting for us to arrive at it, that we will shape the future and that it isn't as real as the present, and that things that are past have somehow literally passed away, that they're not as real as we are right now. Now, that may vary, I suppose, from person to person, but even B theorists admit that the view of the normal average man, so to speak, will be an atheoretic view of time.
Now, what about this accusation leveled towards you on slogans, using slogans? Is this something that philosophers try to catch each other at from time to time?
I don't think so, typically. This is, I find, an odd allegation. What they're referring to is my appeal to the sort of metaphysical first principle that out of nothing, nothing comes, or that something cannot come out of nothing, or that being cannot come from non-being. And I think that far from being mere slogans, these are articulations of a very fundamental principle of metaphysics that goes all the way back to Parmenides in ancient Greece. Parmenides argued that being can only come from being, and that being cannot come from non-being. And it seems to me that that is a very fundamental metaphysical insight that is more than just a slogan. It's really, I think, a self-evident principle when you think about it. So it would be, I would say, a primitive metaphysical principle beyond which it's very difficult to get. Everyone has sort of first principles or foundational principles. And I think it's condescending to dismiss these as mere slogans, because everyone ultimately has some sort of first principles in his metaphysics. And for me, this is one of the most basic, and it's been recognized in the history of philosophy as one of the most basic principles.
Thank you so much for listening to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig, and we'll pick it up there next time and answer some more questions that we receive at reasonablefaith.org. One more time, if you would like to start a Reasonable Faith chapter in your area, information is at reasonablefaith.org. And by the way, if you appreciate the information that you get at reasonablefaith.org and you would like to see these podcasts continue and see us branch out even further, then be a partner with us. You can find out how when you go to reasonablefaith.org. Your financial and prayer support means a great deal to us. That's reasonablefaith.org, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.